RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Thursday morning means Money Talks here at RCR. It's been a while. It's been a while since we've had Farzan Irani, Success Simplified Wealth Management Managing Director. And Farzan is back with us. Long time between drinks. Farzan, how are you doing?
Yeah, mate, I'm doing really well. Been on a holiday overseas to the beautiful islands of Maldives to celebrate my birthday, which was 9/11, September 11th.
Okay, gee.
So I just had the holiday after the fact, the actual holiday with the birthday was celebrated with family. And then I happened to have a client who said who's really happy with what I've done for him, and he threw me a little birthday gift.
Okay. I haven't been to the Maldives. I've seen, because I like watching plane videos, so I've seen video of planes landing there from inside and outside, and it just looks like paradise, is it?
Yeah, definitely, mate. It is paradise. You know, we say New Zealand's beautiful. Obviously, New Zealand's much bigger. These are just islands spread all over the Atlantic Ocean, and it's just brilliant. Blue water, snorkeling is amazing. A bit of jet ski and this and that, light blue water, see-through, and the weather's perfect. It's 26, 27 degrees every day. The resorts are beautiful. The resort we lived in, everything was paid for. So you don't have to worry about anything. You literally wake up, go for breakfast, have a good time, walk on the beach, do some activities. They have evening events and they have DJs. And yeah, it was brilliant, brilliant. And it's beautiful. It is just beautiful. It is secluded from the rest of the world because you have to take a small seaplane to get there once you land at the international airport in Mali. It's just amazing. It's stunning. If you just want to get away from everything, that would be a nice place to be.
I know that it was always the place cited that would disappear under the water if sea level rise happened, which some people think is inevitable, but it's obviously still there because you've just been there. All right. And you're traveling around, Farzan. What have you heard?
Few good things, few bad things, a few exciting things. Obviously, we heard about, since our last chat, we had discussed that there might be a second assassination attempt at Trump.
Yep.
Failed assassination at Trump.
You said it.
Yeah, I said it, mate. And it has happened. And these guys won't let it just get away because their whole plan falls apart to create World War III if he's around. So I've also heard, hey, they've got to throw everything at it now. So there might be a third attempt, this time maybe bigger at maybe one of his rallies, maybe a bigger blast or something. Who knows? Who knows what will exactly happen? But even yesterday, there was supposedly, I think the Department of Justice has just released a letter written by the second person who tried to assassinate him, offering, I think, $150,000.
Yeah.
It's a letter written saying, I failed. I'm so sorry, but I'll pay $150,000. But if you read into what's been happening, the guy was broke. Supposedly, he couldn't pay Social Security. So where's the money coming from? But anyway, that's politics. That's crazy stuff. But they're not. They have to somehow try and stop Trump. There was a shooting as well in America now. So as we said, towards the end of this year, now getting closer to the elections, U.S. elections, there's going to be a lot going on. And that affects all markets and your financial futures and all that kind of stuff. They need an event.
Yeah. One thing that I was fascinated with, Keir Starmer turned up at the White House. And as it was reported, not by mainstream media, but other outlets, that he wanted to fire long-range missiles into pre-2014 Ukrainian territory now occupied by Russia. Looked like it was all going to get signed off. And then, man, something happened. What do you think happened there?
Yes, what I can say is, man, as we've discussed, Kamala or Biden aren't running the show. It's what we call neocons behind the scenes who are running U.S. policy and are driving the war. Anthony Blinken, so to speak, is one of those known neocons. What's happened is obviously he's assured his U.K. counterpart that, hey, this is all a done deal. We can use our missiles and we're going to strike inside Russia. And Russia had said, now this is definitely a red line because obviously it's not Ukraine striking us. It will be U.S. and U.K. So the Prime Minister's bloody jumped on the UK Prime Minister jumped on a plane with maps in his hand and targets in red circles saying these are the places we're going to hit. And he literally gets there. And Joe Biden, I can share this now. There's been a coup in the White House where the Pentagon's taken over. And they said, no, Joe Biden, you're not in charge anymore. We're not going to authorize this.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a chief of staff. And if you understand, the current Pentagon chief is General Lloyd Austin. He pretty much told President Biden in no specific terms, you're not in charge anymore. So there's been a soft coup, so to speak, because they know if they say yes, we're literally at World War III. And as I said, they have to try and start, they have to stop Trump coming in, which means if they start the bombing and all of that, then they can say, hey, elections canceled, just like maybe was done in Ukraine as well. So there's no elections being held. And he's kind of a dictator right now in Ukraine because the people would vote him out. So obviously they want to start a war. The UK Prime Minister has gone there with maps in his hand, and he's literally returned on a flight because Biden said, I'm not in charge. You're not going to be allowed to do this. And it's not just Ukraine. He also said Israel as well. So there's been a soft coup in the White House, and Pentagon's gone, nah, we're not ready for this war yet.
We're not ready for it. It sounds like it's still an option, but we're just, the timing's wrong. You'd hope that they'd never be ready for it unless, you know, someone was doing something so confrontational that that was the only option you had. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. But the point is, it will start eventually. As we've noticed, there's false flags everywhere, right? Something happens. Russia will only hold back so far, mate. And the Western press, unfortunately, is not covering the way it's covered in the Eastern press. I can tell you, even sometimes in countries like India and the Indonesia's and Malaysia's, the press, the way they cover it. Now, the Western press just says, he's just told us about these red lines time and again. He's not going to do anything, not realizing that that Putin is the only grown-up in the room, because he realizes his life's at stake. Once it starts, you cannot go back. And they want to start it so they can then say, look, Russia attacked Ukraine or a NATO country. Obviously, because there's a lot of prime ministers and stuff coming out in Eastern Europe, which are part of the European bloc, and saying, no, we should attack them now. I think Sweden came out yesterday, or Denmark, prime minister came out yesterday and said, why aren't we doing this? We should just attack them now. As I told you, the monetary system is collapsing. If the war doesn't start before, there's a lot of problems in the European banks. There's a lot of problems in that monetary system, as we saw in Japan as well. They need an excuse. If the system collapses before the fact, people know who to blame. The central bankers, so they have to start the war before the fact, and they'll try whatever they can, whatever false flag it is, to try and start a war. In fact, they're now saying that maybe Iran is going to try and assassinate Trump.
Yeah, I see there was a connection to the guy in the bushes in Florida. Name escapes me from the top of my head. The guy that didn't have any money, who was offering the reward, some association with Iran, I heard being reported.
Yeah, they've got to blame someone, right? That's how you then get a chance to go to war with Iran, because they can, people who are not aware of what's going on, they can say, hey, look, this was actually Iran who did it, not the neocons, not us.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, if you know how to read two levels below the news lines, that's when you understand what is really, really going on. But hey, war has been averted for now. I wouldn't put it past yet, because Israel's now pushing on certain boundaries. And as I said, the Pentagon said, no, we're not going to go. If you get attacked, the U.S. is not going to come to support you, Israel. But U.S. still has ships in the Middle East and stuff like that. So this is going to become a bigger conflict in the Middle East. And that's what everyone's afraid of, because it gets on four fronts. And as I've told you before, Pentagon guys know that they cannot win this war. They've done warlike scenarios, and they know they cannot win a war on four fronts, as we mentioned, China, Taiwan, North Korea, South Korea, because Japan actually shot off flares at a Russian plane yesterday as well, just to warn them, because it was flying over the Japanese airspace. So there's a lot going on, and this has implications on markets, because we're on money talks. Geopolitics and macroeconomics affects all of this, mate.
What about BRICS? There's a big BRICS event coming up, just in a matter of weeks. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, it's in Kazan, the BRICS summit being held in October 22nd. And what's happened, and this is why I want to discuss this, because you had a good guest last week who was talking about gold and money and all that kind of stuff. And I obviously don't try and talk too much about this on the radio, because it could be seen as financial advice. But I want to explain to people what's been happening with the gold markets, how We've talked about it used to be a unipolar world with the U.S. dollar and the U.S. Treasury backing everything. And the world is shifting. And the world is shifting since 2022, when the U.S. made a big mistake by sanctioning Russia and freezing their assets. So what's happening in this BRICS, there's been a lot of talk as people have said, oh, it's going to be a BRICS currency and this and that. I can now tell you, yeah, they've talked. They're kind of openly talking about how they're going to do it and what they're going to do. So I'll just cover a few simple things for you. Firstly, why gold? Okay, just understand this. So what's happening? People know that gold used to be money. Richard Nixon cut off the link in 1971, which was supposed to be temporary, because obviously the French president sent ships and they just thought we couldn't have no gold left. So after World War II, U.S. had all the gold and its gold reserves were drying out because you settled in the gold because the U.S. dollar was 35 U.S. dollars to an ounce of gold. And they were printing too much money. They were importing too much stuff. They're fighting too many wars and all of that. So obviously they were running out of gold. So they cut that link. And now what's happened is obviously since 2008, obviously Russia has been buying a lot of gold already. Because Russia has been reducing. So again, I'll just slow this down because I've tried to explain to people there's a difference between the U.S. dollar as a currency and there's difference between the U.S. Treasury, which is what central banks hold as reserves. So when China ships of goods to America, let's say 100 million, I'm just throwing a stupid example, 100 million, but they import only 40 million. They have a trade surplus of 60 million. What do? They invest that in U.S., in treasuries, and they earn interest on it because they have U.S. dollars that just support the U.S. government. Saudi Arabia, the same, or the UAE, the same. They export gold, oil, and the surplus is held in U.S. dollars, and that funds the U.S. Government. So the central banks used to hold U.S. dollar reserves. Now, we saw what happened with Russia. Obviously, theirs was in euros because they've been getting off the U.S. dollars since the 2008 global financial crisis. But I just want to throw some numbers so people can understand what's been happening since about 2022 when this happened. Since Feb 2022 when the Ukraine thing escalated. So a country like Saudi Arabia, its central bank, now it's just come out in the last week or two, because most central banks, as I've told you, watch what they do, not what they say. So the central bank of Saudi Arabia has literally bought 160 tons of gold in Switzerland since February 2022. India itself has been buying a lot of gold, and its gold purchases are up about 400%. They bought 50 tons the central bank bought this year in 2024. And what India's done, India's also literally, India used to hold 100 tons of its gold in the UK, in the UK central bank. And they've literally got that back into India. They've said for geopolitical reasons. So most of these countries know that this war is coming. And India has repatriated its gold back into its borders where it can keep it safe. And what countries like China and India have done, China's got a lot more gold than it even has been mentioning in its official numbers. But in India, the duty, the import duty on gold was 15%. The government's now reduced that to 6% because it would encourage more people to get gold within the borders, to buy gold themselves. So in August, just this August gone, 2 months back, 140 tons of gold was imported into a country like India. It tripled what it was in July as soon as the duty fell off.
Okay.
So countries like China and India are telling their people to invest in gold, to save in gold. And you don't have that stuff in Western democracies. They tell us to put your money in the bank account and earn term deposits and all that kind of stuff because they're debasing the currency. So you're actually losing money by leaving it in there. But also to give you some examples, this is just not a BRICS thing. In 2019, Poland brought home about 100 tons of gold. Hungary and Romania also brought home their gold. And in 2017, I think I might have mentioned this on one of our previous calls, Germany got half its reserves back home as well. So can you see a shift here where the central banks and the governments are bringing their gold back home?
Yeah, yeah.
And now people are like, what's going on here? Why is this happening? So the BRICS have said, we are sick and tired of being told what to do. We want to run our countries on our own. We don't need to be told all the time how to run our countries. So Obviously, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. But there's about 159 countries who want to now have put their name on the ballot to say we want to be part of this system. And what's happening is this de-dollarization trend is moving forward pretty quickly. So just to give you an idea, I'll just talk about a few things because this might confuse people. But they're going to, you know how we have the US dollar as a settlement currency? They're going to have something called the unit. Okay? So the unit, these are all just initial chats right now. Who knows what they're going to call it down the track? But it's just a common unit of account, which is the unit, which is going to be 40% backed by gold and 60% by the member country currencies. So what they're talking about is, let's say, as we mentioned before, when India used to send all these rupees to Russia to import all the oil and gas, what does Russia do with so many rupees? So obviously, India can only export so much to Russia. What do they do with the excess rupees? Now they have an option to convert that unit into gold.
Okay.
Okay. So the settlement could be in gold. This is, again, still initial talk. But why are these countries suddenly all buying more gold, which has kind of put a floor under the price of gold, if you think about it, because people who are interested in gold and silver would understand that gold prices has been hitting new record highs week after week recently. And obviously, because this meeting is coming up, if they announce it, the gold will go up. So people are anticipating that. Now, again, if they don't announce it, the gold might drop off. But this is
right. Gotcha.
Just understanding what's going to happen. And because this is a group of currencies, so 40% gold, 60% member BRICS member national currencies. So now if I have excess of one currency, I could use it in another country to buy something else. So it becomes a trading block. So we don't have to look, the Eastern countries don't have to look to Western countries to provide anything. As I said, most of the natural resources and commodities are sitting in these countries.
Wow. Yeah. Okay?
So that is one thing.
Yep.
That is one thing. And obviously, the way they put a hold on Russian reserves was through the SWIFT system. Every transaction in the world right now goes through this thing called the SWIFT system. So when we talk about CBDCs and all of that, obviously this is preview to what's coming. But as I said, IMF was creating a system called Enbridge, which was supposed to be CBDCs globally being used between each country to settle accounts, trade settlements. So their plan was to use Enbridge and get rid of the US dollar to avoid all of these sanctions. But BRICS has gone, okay, they had started the process, but because of what has happened in the last 2 years with Russia, BRICS has said, hey, we're going to create a BRICS bridge. Yes, we'll play along with you, with the Enbridge, but what has happened is BRICS bridge. So this is like, let's just say a settlement system will be between these countries, nothing to do with the IMF, nothing to do with the Western monetary system, and everything will settle through this. So you're sanction-proof, no one can stop you, no other central bank can meddle with your accounts. And it's a clear transparent thing. Obviously, this is on the blockchain and stuff. So it'll settle in CBDCs between countries. And they're also talking about having their own insurance system, because what you've seen is recently these ships that were being blasted in the Strait of Hormuz and all of that. None of the Western insurance companies wanted to insure these shipments to enforce the sanctions further. So they're going to work on their own insurance system, and they're also going to have their own ratings agency, just like we have the S&P Global and the Moody's right now. They're working on something like that. So there's a big global shift happening towards the BRICS, and they know that they have to create their own full future-proof financial system. It's going to take time. It's not happening tomorrow. And that is why, as I said, they're trying to force Russia's hand, because if war starts, then they can't get ahead with this. They have to focus more on war, and they'll have bigger fish to fry than actually focus on getting this monetary system moving forward. And as I said, the IMF actually wants a global digital currency, one world government, all that kind of stuff.
That, I mean, it's a great separation, really, isn't it? That's what it is.
Yeah, it's bifurcating systems, and this is what I've mentioned, is because they've realized that the Western monetary system is collapsing, and the Western monetary collapse happens because there's only faith in government, and when faith in government collapses, the currency collapses, which means the economy collapses. If you think about the Western currencies have always had strength compared to some of the other currencies. Now it will revert completely because now countries like Australia, a different case because they're a commodity-rich country. New Zealand, yes, milk and meat and all of that, commodities again. But it's all a debt-infused system, whereas these guys have commodities. Russia is the richest commodity country in the world. You understand that. So
yeah.
They don't need to go outside. And America is self-sufficient in everything. It's Europe who's going to massively suffer for the way they're playing around with people's lives and going ahead with this war, so to speak.
All right, guys, what will happen next? Let's, in the time we've got left, come back home. And we had Michael Riedel on, former RBNZ, late last week. And he was talking about how the current recession is actually, I think he said it was worse than the Great Recession of 2008. Economists are calling for faster rate cuts and quite substantial rate cuts. People are falling into negative equity. The low-value mortgage lenders are paying close to $300 more a week for their mortgage. You've got to find that money. So how deep do you think we are in the doo-doo, Farzan, and will dramatic rate cuts help? Will they help?
They'll help a little bit. But as we've talked, when the interest rates were going up, Paul, we have something called a lag effect, right? So as we've seen, even though the Reserve Bank was increasing interest rates, the problem only got worse towards the end. So in the last year, people are massively underwater, whether it's negative equity or they can't service their mortgages. They're having pain on that front. So even when the Reserve Bank starts reducing interest rates, and as I mentioned before, the market tells you before the fact. So the banks have been reducing interest rates even before the Reserve Bank of New Zealand reduced interest rates. But if they reduce the interest rate by only 25 basis points, which is 0.25, that's not going to help people too much because people have gone from about 2.8% mortgages down up to about sevens. And even if they come down to 6.5 right now, it's not having much of an impact. Yes, it will as it rolls off. And as if people haven't fixed again for longer terms, they'll get the benefit of that. But it's not going to drive new activity, so to speak. So as you told me last time, I think you've asked me a couple of times, also, they dropped the interest rates again very low. Why wouldn't it just create massive house buying again? The thing is, people have seen this game in the last 3, 4, 5 years. Interest rates go down, a lot of liquidity created in the system. Yes, a lot of first home buyers have gone out and got burnt in the last couple of years. But smart people go, I've seen this game, I'm not playing this anymore. Add to that, the economy is suffering. So as you just mentioned, this is worse. Now these guys are clearly admitting, which we were talking about a year back, it's worse than the global financial crisis. And they're saying this is as bad as the Great Recession, whatever they're talking about. But it's been negative GDP growth for, I think, 6 out of the 8 quarters. So this is not something healthy where the economy has gone in reverse for a long, long time. People are losing jobs. So do you think the banks, first of all, will scrutinize the deals a lot harder, regardless of just the interest rate? Plus, people are now going, what if my wife loses a job? What if I lose a job? So people aren't going to rush back just because there's been a 25 or 50 basis point cut. But there will be opportunities for investors. Let's say if there's enough rate cuts coming in and the property prices have depreciated enough or gone backwards enough, then there might be an opportunity. But again, I'm saying there's no opportunity for now, okay? For the next 5, 6, 7, 8 years, I wouldn't even dip my toe in one of these things because I don't know what games they're going to play behind the scenes because China's economy suffered so much. They've come out with bazookas recently and their economy is still not recovering. So people just got to understand, just by dropping interest rates, it's not like everyone's going to go out and start flipping homes again. It's not that easy because people are worried about their incomes. We've seen what happened in Wellington. We're seeing what's happened in New Zealand. Unemployment numbers are going to go up and the economy is not doing that well, mate. There's not much happening.
Yeah. And of course, then there's the psychological effect of many, and I mentioned the low equity mortgages, many of those borrowers who borrowed at ridiculously low interest rates to start with now facing, and you just gave the figures before, many of them will be in that dreaded negative equity. And that is psychologically damaging for people, I'm thinking.
Yes, of course it is. Because as I said, you save for so long to get into your house or your first home to own it. As I said, you don't own it. The bank does. But it is a psychological hit because you work so hard to save that money, or you ask mom and dad. I speak to a few people who've had their parents give them that initial deposit, and they feel embarrassed and ashamed now because all their parents' savings are gone because they bought at the wrong time, and they had to now deal with higher interest rates. So it's not good on the psyche of the younger generation, right? Because they're thinking they're being left behind all the way. And this is why they divide us again on saying, look, it's baby boomers who had all the benefit of all these things. And it's the younger generation who's suffering. And then they say, oh, you shouldn't be having avocado on toast and all that stuff. These are stupid arguments. The simple thing is, there's a common, not enemy, but common problem here. It's the central banks. They create too much money. They create problems. In fact, this is the Western countries have bigger problems in a way. The problems will also happen in Eastern countries. I'm not denying that. But they have a larger population base to get out of these things. To give you an idea, I was just, again, looking through some numbers, and our global GDP is about $110 trillion. And just in 2023, the global debt increased by $15 trillion to $313 trillion. So the global GDP, Paul, is $110. The global debt is $313 trillion.
Yeah.
How does it ever get paid?
Well, it can't.
It doesn't.
We can't. Yeah.
It can't, right? And the problem is, most of the growth has happened in the developed economies. When I say developed, your France is close to 400% debt to GDP. Spain is 500% debt to GDP. Germany is close to 350, because they have made promises to their citizens to pay superannuation, to give free hospital care, to help with this, to help with that, to help with this, to help with that. And they made these false promises to their citizens, saying, we look after you because you're paying taxes. And that is, I'm just telling people living in Western democracies or developed countries to realize the governments are not going to keep their promises. Because when they default, if they get a war, or they take us into hyperinflation. So they might have promised you a superannuation of, let's say, I don't know what the superannuation amount is, but let's just say $500 a week. And you could survive on that, pay your rents and groceries and bits and pieces. $500 a week ain't going to pay that. It might be closer to $1,200 a week that's going to cost you to live. Because if they print money to keep their promises, the money is going to lose its value, which means they'll say, oh, we promised you $500 a week, right? That's okay. And this is why also they play with the inflation numbers, because they got to show inflation is much lower because these things are inflation adjusted. So there's a lot of hurt coming in these kind of avenues, right? It's just people have to be aware that what we've lived in the last 40 years ain't going to be what we're going to live moving forward. And especially if there's this bifurcation and countries, these BRICS countries say, hey, you want us to ship something to you, it's going to cost you our currency. So now just think about the implications of those geopolitics. New Zealand, Australia are quite far from everything. Maybe we have to buddy up with Australia for some things. And New Zealand has the gold. The question I want people to ask, if anyone's listening and if anyone can hold our politicians or our central bank accountable, is most central banks around the world are bringing home their gold. How much gold does New Zealand Central Bank have?
Yeah, what are we doing? Well, I've asked a lot of people, Shane Jones even, shouldn't we be digging up all the gold that we think we have and putting it in a vault?
Well, we could, but it's not. Yeah, there's a time between when you start commissioning all of this, you dig the dirt, there's a long process, man. Even if you start now, it might take 6, 7, 8 years before we get the first ton. Exactly.
Well, but that's okay. I mean, you might as well get into it now. If it's sitting in the ground and we can go full industrial on getting it, like it's a urgent national sort of rally call to action, then shouldn't we be doing it?
Yes, Paul. But the problem is then that average citizen's going to start asking questions about what is gold. Why are they doing this?
Well, they could do it quietly.
Well, like the other central banks, yes, they could. But people will start asking questions. And some of our listeners have been paying attention to what gold is and how you can hold other assets outside the monetary system or the banking financial system. but they don't want you to be aware. Then you lose faith in their currency. And this is what I'm saying. Even if markets are going up, what happens is when people realize that these guys cannot stop, to keep their promises, they're going to have to keep printing money. And this is what causes high inflation or hyperinflation. People get rid of their currency as soon as the paycheck comes in. This is what happened in Weimar Germany. You lose confidence in the government and you start throwing out your paper to get anything you can. If you need food next week, I tell some of my clients, right? You need tires? Buy them now. Why would you wait for it?
Yeah.
So buy real stuff,
yep,
because you're going to need them anyways. Or whatever it is. Is it a battery for your solar panels or whatever? Get a spare one because it's going to be more expensive later on. And the paper you're holding on to is losing value. So what's the point of holding on to that when it's going to lose more value into the future? You're going to need more paper units to buy the same stuff you need now. So people realize this and they start changing it immediately. I think I've given you examples where they jump on a bus in the morning to work and the price is different. And by the time they come back in the evening, the price is different. That's hyperinflation, obviously. We're not going there, but we have serious problems in the West because the promises can't be kept. I have uncovered something else. We don't have time for it today, and maybe on my next chat, but I have uncovered some fraud in the US. They've started talking in the last 2 months to do with people's property prices. And what the city councils and the school districts in America, so think about this, interest rates are going up, house prices are coming down, and I think we've hinted at this conversation, but why are people's rates going up?
We have certainly gone there. Okay, well, that's the next chat, Farzan, because we're out of time, but that'll keep everybody on the edge until then. Absolutely.
Yeah, this is going to be big, big news because it is fraud on the biggest level, and it has been proved in different states in America now. But you just got to understand the whole system is at stake out here because there's manipulation of your rates notices to support the debt that the city councils and municipalities have taken.
We might be seeing a bit of that here, maybe. We can talk about that more as well next time.
Quite possibly, yeah.
All right, Farzan, how do people get in touch? Please remind us one more time.
Yeah, sure. Successsimplified.life. Flick me an email. Happy to chat with you guys. Everyone have a good day and thanks for this opportunity again, mate.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.